Sunchaser folded the hides that had covered the sweat lodge frame and carefully packed them on Helper's travoy. The bent poles of the frame stood naked now, gleaming reddish in the morning sunlight. Father Sun had just barely chased away the fires of Dawnchild, and purple shadows pooled in every undulation on the beach. Kestrel stepped out of the ocean waves and started back with a hide sack full of mussels. Sunchaser had been surreptitiously studying her for over half a hand of time while she waded the shallows, collecting breakfast. The size and colors of the mussels seemed to amaze her, as they did everyone not native to the coast. She swung her sack happily as she walked, Helper trotting at her heels. Cloud Girl sat in her rabbit fur sack across the fire from Sunchaser, half asleep, sucking on her new pack rat hide pacifier. Kestrel smiled at Sunchaser. She knelt before the fire and dumped the mussels into the boiling bag on the tripod. Her quick eyes surveyed the campsite.
It looks like you have everything packed.
Almost. After breakfast, we'll need to gather our tools and fill our packs. Then we'll be ready to go.
But where will we go? That's the question.
Down the beach. Whalebeard Village isn't far. We'll stop there. Perhaps Oxbaum left word of his whereabouts.
Kestrel used two sticks to lift a large, hot stone from the edge of the fire. Gingerly, she dropped it into the boiling bag. The burst of steam made her fall backward to the sand, her brown eyes wide.
Oh, that rock was much hotter than I thought. I hope it doesn't split the bag.
Won't matter. The mussels will be cooked long before the water drains out.
They certainly will.
The sound of that childlike amusement warmed something old and cold in Sunchaser's soul. He looked at Kestrel, his whole heart in his eyes. She sat with her hands braced behind her, her hair tumbling wild and tangled over her shoulders. The posture accentuated her breasts, breasts that had pressed against him in the urgency of their lovemaking.
You look very beautiful this morning.
She added two more hot stones to the bag, small ones this time, and gazed at him adoringly. Steam spun a lacy pattern around Kestrel's face. If he lived to be as old as Mother Ocean, he would never forget Kestrel's childlike beauty.
You know, you can't collect those big mussels in the summertime.
No? Why not?
They eat small creatures that make poisons. It doesn't seem to bother the mussels, but the poisons can make a human very sick.
They don't eat those same creatures in other seasons?
I imagine they would if they could, but those tiny animals flourish only in warm weather.
Oh, I must collect big mussels only in the cool moons. Good. Thank you for telling me. In the marsh country, we don't have such mussels. I'm sure they're done. Are you ready to eat?
Kestrel set out their bowls and scooped five mussels into his bowl and three into her own. Rather than handing the bowl straight across to him, she rose and carried it, knelt before him, and placed it ceremoniously at his feet, her eyes downcast as though waiting for his approval. Sunchaser frowned. He put a hand beneath her chin and lifted her face to look into her bright eyes.
I don't know the ways of your people, Kestrel, but you don't have to do this for me. If you were from my clan, I would make no move without your consent. I would go to live in your mother's village. You would own all of my belongings, our lodge, our children, everything except my healer's bag. I'm allowed sacred things, but only those. My people trace their lineage through the women. Men rule after having their decisions approved by the female elders of the clan.
Iceplant told me about that. That's why he said I wasn't his cousin.
That's right. Among my people, you and Iceplant would not have been cousins.
Kestrel lowered her eyes to the mussels in his bowl. She sat still for a moment. Then she reached out and lifted Sunchaser's right hand, unfolded his fingers, and tenderly pressed his palm to her cheek. Her skin felt cool and soft.
You are so kind to me.
I wasn't being kind, Kestrel. I was being honest.
She kissed his palm and released it. Her young face slackened into grave lines.
Sunchaser, there wasn't time last night, but soon we must talk about the land of the dead. When you are ready.
I'm ready now. What did you want to talk about?
When I came to find you, I heard voices, Sunchaser. I don't know who they were or where they came from, but it's important that I tell you what they said.
They were the spirits in your painting, Kestrel. I heard them too. They helped me to avoid the first trap along the trail.
Is that who they were?
That's who they were. Did the spirits of the painting tell you something they didn't tell me?
Well, I don't know. They said, Kestrel, you'll never find Sunchaser if you stay on the trails. They're being witched. You have to fly above them. Tell Sunchaser. I didn't really understand. But when I leaped over the tangle of trails, I could tell the direction from which you called. I sighted on an orange spire on the horizon. That's how I found you.
Being witched? How? I mean, by whom? Who is the witch?
The spirits didn't tell me. Perhaps they didn't know, but...
They always know. They just won't say, for their own reasons. I'm sorry. Go on. What else did they say?
Nothing. Just that you better learn how to fly over the trails.
I've done that before. Once on the backs of the Thunder Beings. Another time with the help of Grandmother Condor. But they took me only because they thought I was dead.
Dead?
The first time, I'd been dreaming for so long that Good Plume had pronounced me dead. She couldn't find my heartbeat, so she prepared my body for burial and called to the Thunder Beings to come for my soul. And they did. That's how I reached Wolf Dreamer's Lodge of Light.
And that's when he gave you the maze?
Yes, so I could find him again without the Thunder Beings' help.
Then why would the spirits tell you that you had to fly?
They must mean that I can't counter the witching, that the maze is useless now. Ordinarily, witches are easy to identify, and all you have to do is threaten them to make them stop. I've never even had to battle one. Perhaps the time has come.
This must be a powerful witch, Sunchaser. I could see the tangle of trails. They coiled and knotted, and some even spun off and led nowhere.
But I can't think of anyone who would want to...
His soul sped back to the day of the Mammoth's attack on OtterClan Village, and a shrill, triumphant cry.
Ketstra. No. No, it couldn't be. He's not that powerful. Or that malicious, is he?
Who?
He's a dreamer. At least he claims to be. From the Otter Clan.
Sunchaser, do not let my words anger you. But you don't seem to realize the extent to which humans can enfold evil into their souls. You love everyone. And everything. Suspicion isn't a part of your nature. I've learned firsthand about hatred and how deep the human soul can sink. Think, could Ketstra be a witch?
He's the only person who might want to stop me from entering the land of the dead. He's always resented me.
Sunchaser balled a fist against the emotions that cramped his belly. His mouth had become a hard line. How could the day that had begun so wonderfully have descended so quickly to these dark depths? A rage possessed him that he had not felt in cycles. How stupid he had been. It had never even occurred to him that his problems might have sprung from witching. For cycles, he had defended Ketstra, as he would have defended any dreamer. He knew how many demands power made. He would never condemn someone unless he had substantial evidence.
Maybe it isn't this Ketstra, Sunchaser. Maybe it's someone else. Even if Ketstra resents you, why would he want to stop you from entering the land of the dead when he knows that the survival of the mammoths depends upon you? And dreamers do know such things, don't they?
Maybe he thinks he can do it himself.
Sunchaser shoved his bowl of mussels aside, no longer hungry.
I'd gladly yield to him if I thought he could. I don't know why power works the way it does, choosing one dreamer instead of ten or tens of tens.
Perhaps power has limitations too.
Kestrel's wide, innocent eyes concealed a perceptive soul.
How strange that you understand that. Most people think that power can do anything it wants to. It can't, of course. The spirits groom dreamers very carefully, preparing them for the final desperate moments of a certain age. But not even they can force the world to be what they want it to be. What they know it needs to be.
My grandmother told me once that power has to start very early if it wants to affect a person's life. It must begin with a child.
Yes, with the child, and work persistently on shaping the adult for its own purposes. Dreamers are tools. Nothing more, nothing less.
Did he really believe that? That power cared nothing about the dreamer? No, he didn't. Not really. He knew that above Old Man and Mother Ocean worried about him constantly, and he could sense Wolf Dreamer and Mammoth Above working for him all the time, helping him, encouraging him. Kestrel slowly finished her last muscle and watched the morning brighten over Mother Ocean.
Sunchaser, why do you think power always demands so much of its chosen dreamers?
Because salvation can be bought only with the price of the soul. But we should thank above Old Man Kestrel that it could be bought at all.
For an instant, her eyes glowed. He noted the way she clenched her hands in her lap.
Sunchaser, tell me about Catchstraw. What's he like?
He's an old fool.
A fool? Yet the Otter Clan believes he's a real dreamer?
Some of them do. Maybe all of them. I don't know. Catchstraw led the Mammoth Spirit Dances while I was in the mountains, healing. I heard that he was always the first one to fall out of the dance circle. His dedication to Mammoth Above lasts only as long as his comfort.
So he's not much of a dreamer?
No, not much of one. Kestrel, I think we should be going.
Sunchaser rose, feeling sick to his stomach. As he passed Kestrel, he put a hand on her shoulder tenderly and went to stuff more things into his pack. She shifted to look at him.
If it turns out this Catchstraw is the witch, can you stop him?
Sunchaser picked up a tiny colored basket, the one he had placed the ants in.
Yes, if the time comes. Dreamers know very well how to fight fire with fire. We just hate to have to do it. It takes a great deal of power. Power better spent trying to mend an out-of-balance world.
Oxbalm hobbled through the trees behind Horseweed. His knees ached with a fiery intensity. The cold in these mountains ate at his bones like a starving coyote.
Here it is, Grandfather.
Horseweed knelt by a slab of weathered granite. Oxbalm did not even have to bend over, logging the details of the perverted maze. Catchstraw had taken special pains to make his artistry perfect. He'd used crushed charcoal and red sandstone. Black lines curled and wove about, enmeshing red spirals until they strangled for lack of spiritual direction. On the periphery of the maze, condor feathers lay scattered on the ground. It was as if one of the great birds had been captured here and killed. But no blood marred the stone.
He's not even bothering to erase his mazes anymore.
No.
Horseweed stood and shoved his hands into the pockets of his buckskin coat.
He's grown arrogant, Grandfather, and careless.
We must not wait any longer. Sunchaser is in grave danger. At least one of the elders of the clan must be made aware of this now, before it's too late. Find Dizzy Seal, and your grandmother. Bring them here. I want them to see this obscene maze, and the condor feathers, with their own eyes. We will need their support to end this madness. But...
He lifted a warning hand.
Let no one else know what you're doing.
Yes, Grandfather.
Horseweed hurried away through the forest. Oxbalm peered down at the tangled lines. No human could make sense of them. And what of the condor feathers? How had they gotten here? A shudder went up his spine. Oxbalm hobbled over to sit down on a nearby rock, then squinted warily at the sky.
Is that what Catchstraw has done? Turned himself into a witch? It would be just like him. He couldn't dream, so he took the coward's way out. Started using power for his own ends. The old fool. If he's hurt Sunchaser, everyone for a 10-day walk will come running just to drive a dart through him. But I'll be the first to pierce your heart, Catchstraw. I promise you that.
Sunchaser and Kestrel walked side by side down the beach. Sunchaser pulled up the collar of his moose-hide coat. Ahead of them, an eroded hill sloped down to the shore. Twisted firs grew thickly on the crest and dotted the rocky flanks. On the other side of the hill, the branches of a few scraggly aspens thrust up, their pale green leaves trembling in the wind.
Will they follow us all the way to OtterClan Village?
Sunchaser frowned at the mammoth cow and her calf, plodding silently at the fringe of the water. The mammoths had emerged from the trees just after he and Kestrel had left their old camp and had fallen into line behind them. The calf held on to his mother's tail with his trunk.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
I'd like that.
Would you?
Oh, yes. I never feel whole unless there are animals close by.
It is said by the wise ones that it's only through the eyes of animals that we see ourselves correctly, as we really are. Because animals see a person's soul, unlike humans, who often see only the body.
Kestrel's eyes narrowed as if lost in thought. Sunchaser pointed.
Whalebeard Village is just around the base of that hill.
Helper trotted at Sunchaser's right side, hauling the travoy effortlessly, though his tongue hung out. His hair had grown back in a thin black wealth. The fur made his nose seem longer, his ears more pointed. He looked strikingly like a wolf, but pale tan fur encircled his eyes and was the only light color on his entire body. His tail had become a dark bush.
Whalebeard Village?
Yes. I haven't been here in two cycles, but the leader used to be a man named Woodtick.
So his wife will be the clan matron? Is that right? And she and her sisters will be the owners of the village?
You're learning very quickly. Yes, that's the way it works here on the coast. And when those women die, their daughters will take over the administration of the lodges and the clam collecting beds. They will also inherit the possessions of the dead women.
It's so different from the ways of my people. Men own and rule everything in my clan. A woman has nothing of her own. I don't know if I'll ever get used to the laws of the sea people.
Sunchaser smiled, and when she smiled back at him, his throat tightened. He reached out and clasped her hand, twining his fingers with hers.
Yes, you will. It won't take long. I'll bet that you understand almost everything within 3 or 4 moons. This way is easier, you see. And it makes sense. People don't fight over which family gets what if a man and woman decide they don't like each other anymore. No one fights over the shellfish beds or the root grounds.
What will be hard for me, Sunchaser? Are there some things that are very complicated?
A few. For example, kinship and how it affects social relationships. I've lived for over 25 summers and still don't fully understand the way kinship works. But as a man, I'm not supposed to. Kinship and property, those things are the province of women. Political alliances are established based on the economic advantages to be gained. In other words, you won't just marry Cloud Girl to any man who comes along and takes a fancy to her. He'll be someone who will advance the interests of the Otter Clan.
But what if she chooses someone who won't advance the clan's interests?
She won't. Cloud Girl is your daughter, and therefore she will know where her duties lie.
They rounded the base of the hill, and Whalebeard Village came into view. On the leeward side of the hill, more than a dozen lodges clustered in a crescent, facing the roaring waves of Mother Ocean. Sunchaser frowned. No one was outside. On such a pleasant day, children should be playing in the sand, men gambling in front of the lodges, and women weaving fishing nets from yucca cordage. The fire hearth in the central plaza had burned down to nothing. Only the heaviest of the dead coals had survived the wind. They'd rolled into a pile against the eastern edge of the hearth.
Kestrel, wait for me here. Something's wrong. I don't know what, but I'd feel better if you didn't come with me.
I'll wait over there by the aspen tree, Sunchaser.
I'll be back when I know what's happened.
He walked forward.
Woodtick? Shining Hunter Woman? Anybody? Where is everyone?
A little old man, as frail as a stalk of winter thistle, ducked through a lodge door. He squinted, then he ran forward. His doeskin shirt and pants bore sweat stains and splatters of blood.
Sunchaser? Oh, blessed spirits! We've been praying for you to come!
He grabbed Sunchaser around the waist and hugged him frantically.
We've been so desperate, Sunchaser. More than 20 people have died. Even my beloved Shining Hunter.
Sunchaser held the old man tightly and let him weep.
I didn't know you had illness here, Woodtick, or I would have come along before now.
The old man pushed away and stared up through his misery.
But you're here now. Bless the spirits, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you.
Tell me about the sickness.
Sunchaser linked his arm through Woodtick's to support the frail elder, and together they walked toward the cold hearth in the plaza. A stack of wood sat by the stone circle. It looked untouched. As they walked past the lodges, Sunchaser could smell the odors of urine and vomit drifting out to him. Woodtick held Sunchaser's arm tightly.
This must be the same sickness that attacked the mountain villages, Sunchaser. High fever. People have been bleeding from the mouth. The little children. The children, they just seem to shrink and disappear before our eyes. We have only 12 people left in the entire village.
Sunchaser paled. Whalebeard Village had numbered 35 the last time he had been here.
Let me get my healer's pack. Then take me through the lodges so I can identify the sickest people. I know how this illness works. If there's anyone who has been sick for 3 days...
Several people. But little Sage and her son, Vordarts, are two of the worst. They live in the last lodge.
He lifted a trembling arm and pointed.
Wait for me there. I'll be right back.
He released Woodtick's arm and ran to where Kestrel stood in the aspen grove. She had already begun unloading Helper's travoy, stacking hides, separating Sunchaser's things from hers. Sunchaser grabbed his healer's pack from the ground.
Kestrel, please, don't come into the village. Stay here. There's sickness. I've seen it before, and it's deadly. I don't want to take any chances with you or Cloud Girl. I'll be back soon. No, maybe not until tomorrow, but...
Don't waste time telling me about it, Sunchaser. Go to them. I'll set up the lodge, build a fire, and wait for you. Help as many people as you can.
He hugged her to him, hard, then backed away and ran across the sand to the southernmost lodge. Woodtick stood before it. A large structure. It spread 4 body lengths long and 3 wide. The exterior looked poorly tended. The red and blue geometric designs had faded badly.
Hurry! Please hurry!
The chief held the door flap open, and Sunchaser ducked through into darkness. The odors of excrement and sweating bodies nearly suffocated him. The fire in the center of the floor had burned down to white ashes. As his eyes adjusted, he made out the loops of cordage attached by thongs to the back wall, and the brightly colored nut baskets hung from the ridgepole. There were 3 people in the lodge, 2 women and a little boy. The only one well enough to greet him was an old woman wearing a dress covered with magnificent quillwork, but the garment was filthy. Gray hair hung in damp straggles around her flabby face. She rose slowly and tottered forward.
Oh, Sunchaser. I am Falcon Tail. This is my daughter, Little Sage.
She held out her hand to the young woman shivering beneath the mound of hides on the far side of the lodge. A little boy lay at her feet. In the gloom, Sunchaser could make out only their pale faces.
And this is my grandson, Vordarts.
The boy looked worse than his mother. His eyes rolled aimlessly, and his skin had a mottled flush. He moved his lips in soundless words.
How old is Vordarts?
Sunchaser knelt by the boy's side. He pulled back the heavy hides and put a cool hand on Vordarts' bare chest. The flesh was very hot.
3 summers. He's the only grandchild I have left.
He's going to be all right, Falcon Tail. I'm sure of it. I've seen many of these cases before. Power can heal him.
The old woman dropped her face in her hands. Sunchaser unlaced his pack and removed his abalone shell, his otter pipe, and the white stone cut from the foot of Great White Giant. He arranged them in a row at the boy's side. Then he drew out a small sack filled with a mixture of dried willow bark and poplar buds.
Falcon Tail, I'll need your help.
She hurried to his side, her eyes wide and still shining with tears.
Anything, Sunchaser. What do you need me to do?
He held up the sack.
Could you boil some water and throw the contents of this sack in? When the water is boiled down to a milky fluid, we'll start giving it to Vordarts and Little Sage. It will bring down their fevers.
Falcon Tail took the sack and hobbled quickly across the lodge to collect a soapstone bowl. She set it beside the fire hearth while she used a stick to dig around in the white ash, looking for a hot ember. She scraped all the cold coals to the side and mounded the ones that glowed in the center of the hearth, then added kindling. Fire crackled, and the little flames threw a wavering orange halo over the interior of the lodge. Falcon Tail added more wood to the flames.
Sunchaser?
Woodtick stood anxiously by the door.
Is there something I can do to help you?
Yes, please go and ask Kestrel, the woman I'm traveling with, to gather more willow bark and poplar buds for me. She'll know the kinds I need. But Woodtick, I'm worried about her and her baby. Could you make sure that she doesn't come near the lodges? The baby is so tiny, and Kestrel...
Yes, I understand. I'll make sure. I'll go right now.
He started to duck beneath the door flap, but stopped and wet his lips before he slowly straightened up.
Did you say her name was Kestrel?
Sunchaser had so absorbed himself in preparing four darts for the healing ceremony that he didn't notice the chief's tone.
Yes. She's setting up our camp in the aspen grove to the east of the village. Hurry, Woodtick. Everyone who is feverish will need this willow and poplar tea. It would be best if we could hang a large boiling bag over the plaza fire pit. That way anyone who needs it can get to it quickly.
I'll tell Kestrel.
As Kestrel knelt in the cool shadows of the aspens, she saw Woodtick coming. Reaching around and gripping her daughter's tiny hand, she stood up. The chief trudged wearily toward her, his elderly face running with sweat, and she could see the bloodstains on his doeskin shirt.
Kestrel? Sunchaser. He needs you to gather fever plants for him.
Her brows drew together. She trotted forward.
Which fever plants, Woodtick?
No, stop!
Woodtick threw out a hand.
Don't get close to me, please. I may carry the evil spirits of the sickness.
He bent forward and propped his hands on his knees. His gray braid fell forward, partly obscuring his wrinkled face.
Which fever plants, Woodtick?
Poplar buds and willow bark. If you can gather them and leave them near the plaza fire pit, I'll get them and put them in the boiling bag.
Yes, all right, I'll hurry.
Woodtick's frightened face slackened when Kestrel immediately fell to her knees before a thick tangle of willow. She drew her chert scraper from the pack around her waist and began sawing the red stems in two. Woodtick's faint smile contained more gratitude than Kestrel had ever received in her life. She hastily gathered the willow stems and ran around the spring to a cluster of young aspen saplings. She trimmed off several of the newest buds. She didn't know why, but aspen, willow, and poplar seemed to have the same ability to bring down fever.
I'll wait for you by the fire pit.
I'll be there soon.
He nodded and trotted unsteadily back toward the village. His aged legs wobbled with fatigue, and perhaps with the stress of tending ill relatives. Kestrel turned back to the saplings.
Oh, Cloud Girl, I wonder how much Sunchaser needs. From the number of lodges, there must be 30 or 40 people who live here. But not all of them will be sick. And I don't know how long the illness has been going on. I'll assume that he needs at least enough for 20 people tonight. Then I'll gather more tomorrow morning.
When she'd trimmed off enough aspen buds, she stuffed them into her pack and returned to their camp in the tall grove. White trunks created a dense fortress around her. She sat cross-legged by the pile of hides and pulled out her chert scraper to strip the willow stems. She peeled off the red outer bark and isolated the white strips of fibrous inner bark. Kestrel's brows drew together as she emptied her pack on the sand and filled it with the strips of willow bark and the aspen buds. Helper sat on the other side of the pile of hides, watching her. His warm brown eyes glowed.
I'll be back in a little while, Helper. Stay and guard.
She rose and trotted across the sand. Kestrel knelt before the plaza fire pit and emptied her pack onto one of the flat stones that formed the fire ring. She rose to her feet.
Woodtick?
The old chief ducked through the flap of the southernmost lodge. Kestrel caught a glimpse of Sunchaser, kneeling, his white hair glinting in firelight, before the flap fell closed and Woodtick hobbled forward.
Let me know when Sunchaser needs more.
Thank you, Kestrel. I will.
He lifted a hand appreciatively. Kestrel turned and trudged back toward their camp in the aspens.
Now to make a shelter.
Kestrel lay asleep, fully clothed on top of a soft pile of hides when Sunchaser's voice woke her.
I don't know, Woodtick. I wish I did. Then I could change it.
Kestrel rolled onto her back. Darkness cloaked the world. Her fire had burned down to a bed of brilliant scarlet coals. She had threaded short lengths of leather through the roof twine, to which she'd attached Sunchaser's precious baskets of Dreamer's herbs, her pack, and Cloud Girl's rabbit fur sack, to keep them from being chewed by hungry rodents. They gleamed with a reddish hue.
I don't understand why Mother Ocean is doing this to us. Our clan has been faithful. Why would she curse us with this calamity?
It's hard to understand the ways of the spirits, Woodtick.
But, Sunchaser, if you can't heal my people, who can? What hope is there?
I'll try again tomorrow, Woodtick. Get some rest. You need it very badly. There's nothing more you can do tonight.
Yes, Sunchaser. You asked earlier where Oxbalm had taken the Otter Clan. We were so busy, I didn't have a chance to answer. They're in the foothills. If you take the trail that splits off on the northern side of the hill, you'll find them.
Thank you, old friend. We'll go in a few days, after your village is well again.
Sunchaser, about the woman you're with, this Kestrel. Who is she?
Don't worry about Kestrel, Woodtick. Some dreamers can get along just fine with women in their lives. I'm one of those. Please, don't worry. Go to sleep. You must get some rest.
And you too, Sunchaser. I want to talk with you more tomorrow about Kestrel.
Yes, we'll do that. Good night.
The tent flap opened, and moonlight flooded inside as Sunchaser ducked through, then the flap dropped. Sunchaser looked at her through weary eyes. Sweat glued wisps of white hair to his temples.
How are things in the village?
Worse than I want to admit.
Well, there's nothing more you can do tonight. You need to sleep, Sunchaser.
Kestrel lifted Cloud Girl's sleeping body and moved her to the other side of the tent, behind her, then scooted over to make room for Sunchaser. He threw more wood on the coals and removed his garments, piling them by the fire pit. Kestrel knew he'd done that so his clothing would be warm in case he needed to put it on again in the middle of the night. Sunchaser stretched his tall body out beside her, where she lay on the hides. He leaned his head sideways to rest his chin against her hair.
Sunchaser, how many did you heal today?
None.
Kestrel looked at him. He stared unblinking at the ceiling, white-lipped and silent.
You just arrived. Tomorrow.
What's wrong with me, Kestrel? I used to be able to heal people. Why can't I do it now?
Kestrel wrapped her arms around him, holding him.
You're exhausted. Wait. Tomorrow you'll be able to heal once you've had a good night's rest.
Kestrel, everyone I touched today, they died.
He turned his face away to stare blindly at the pile of firewood she'd gathered and stacked by the entry. The low flickers of the fire gave his taut face a curiously ethereal quality. Wrenching grief filtered through her. Kestrel braced herself on one elbow. He looked at her in uncanny understanding, almost as though he had been there that day, had been standing beside her when she'd gazed into Ice Plant's living eyes for the last time. Sunchaser returned her kiss, his lips moving softly at first, as if to comfort her, but it quickly became more than that. He kissed her so passionately that all other concerns vanished from her thoughts. Accustomed to his usual leisurely gentleness, she froze when he roughly pulled her dress over her head and tossed it over by the door flap. He rolled her onto her back and caressed her body hungrily.
Oh, Kestrel, I love you so much.
While her body responded to his frantic need, Helper nosed the door flap aside and entered the tent. He met and held Kestrel's gaze, then went to flop down on Sunchaser's shirt by the fire. He watched her through wide, glistening eyes. In them, she saw deep sadness. Sunchaser woke before dawn the next morning. He blinked wearily in the graying darkness. The futility hadn't fled in the night. Today he would have to try that much harder, give that much more of himself, and he couldn't be sure that he had enough left. He turned his head, seeking Kestrel, and found her gone. He shoved away the hide that covered him and blinked again at the dimness.
Kestrel?
She had probably gone out to scour the tidal pools for breakfast. He rolled onto his side, aware of the soreness in his groin. The discomfort brought warm memories of the pulsing release he'd experienced. But if he ached, How did she feel? Shame flushed his cheeks. She was such a tiny woman. Had he hurt her? He reached up and pulled the tent flap back to look outside. Mother Ocean moved with a tarnished silver glow. He scanned the beach. The black silhouettes of the mammoth cow and her calf lay bedded down at the base of the hill, as though to keep watch on the trail. The cow's huge head was up, staring at his tent. Sunchaser let the flap fall closed and rolled onto his back again. Where could Kestrel be? She might have gone around the hill to search the pools of the inlet. Yes, that would make sense. A wealth of clams, crabs, and mussels lived there. Helper peered at him across the dead fire. The dog blended with the darkness. Only the pale fur around his eyes showed.
Good morning, Helper. Where's Kestrel?
The dog propped his chin on his paws.
Did I hurt her last night, Helper? Where is she? I didn't mean to. I just felt so desperate.
Sunchaser sat up and tugged his clothes out from beneath Helper, slipped his shirt over his head, and pulled on his pants. His nerves had begun to tingle as if they'd been flayed. Using a stick from the pile of firewood, he rolled together a few red coals and steepled several dry twigs over the top of them. Flames danced to life. In the tawny gleam, he noticed that Kestrel had taken Cloud Girl with her. She often took her daughter so she could talk to her while she combed the shore. But her pack and a single deer hide were also missing from their place in the back corner. Sunchaser hesitated, a thoughtful gaze on the spot where Cloud Girl had been. No, she wouldn't. He hurriedly tied on his moccasins and lunged to his feet, shoved the door flap aside, and trotted across the sand toward the mammoth cow and her calf. They watched him, quietly, unmoving.
Kestrel? Kestrel!
He headed north toward the shallow inlet. The eastern foothills rose like dark swells of water. Above them, the faint bluish gleam of Dawnchild lit the heavens, dimming the twinkle of the star people. The trail that led to the new OtterClan village shone clearly, a pale streak through the black trees. She wouldn't have gone on without him, would she? It was too dangerous.
Kestrel!
He ran beside the ebbing water, but no human form showed in the false dawn. The retreating surf flooded the shore and contracted into the whispering waves. He turned back and sprinted southward. She'd tensed when he'd taken her last night. In his desperation, he hadn't cared that she'd gone rigid. Only later had she responded to his movements. As he neared Whalebeard Village, he saw a man standing alone by the central fire pit. Low flames leaped and crackled in the cold breeze.
Sunchaser.
Woodtick.
He trotted toward the fire pit. The chief's white hair hung loose, blowing in the wind.
She's gone, Sunchaser.
His steps faltered.
Gone? When?
I couldn't sleep. I saw her walking down by the shore, maybe 7 or 8 hands of time ago.
She left in the middle of the night? Where did she go? Which direction?
Northward. That's all I know. Sunchaser, I must tell you something. I don't know if she's the same Kestrel, but...
What do you mean, the same Kestrel?
For one thing, days ago, 2 men stopped here. I waved them away, but not before they asked me about a woman named Kestrel. The gray-haired man, a trader called Lambkin, said she was his wife, and that she was traveling with a newborn baby. He asked if we'd seen her. When I answered no, he asked for directions to the new Otter Clan village. I gave them to her.
What? What else?
4 hunters from the Blackwater Draw Clan came through. They said that Trader Lambkill might be following them, and that we should prepare because he was crazy. They said he carried a dead baby in the pack on his back and claimed that it spoke to him. They said they were also hunting this Kestrel because she had killed their brother, driven a tapir bone stiletto through his heart. Then when you arrived and I heard the name of your companion, I couldn't believe she could be the same woman, especially not when I saw how much you cared for her. But now, is she the same?
Yes, though I don't know whether the things you were told are true. Kestrel killed a man?
Woodtick examined Sunchaser's face, his rigid stance.
Don't leave us, Unchaser. We need you. I know you must be worried about Kestrel, but we're desperate. Our needs are so great. You see that, don't you? She is one woman. 10 of my relatives are sick.
Misery shot through Sunchaser's veins. He couldn't speak, couldn't think without agony. Over by the hill, the mammoth cow rose to her feet. Wan blue light flashed from her short tusks and reflected with a fiery sheen in her eyes. The calf stood and shook himself, sending a gleaming wave through his long auburn hair. Woodtick turned in the direction of Sunchaser's gaze, then extended his hands.
Kestrel has been running for a long time, Sunchaser. She'll be all right. She knows how to hide from her husband, but we...
Sunchaser ran stumbling through the sand toward his camp. The fragile scents of spring grasses and damp rocks surrounded Kestrel as she climbed the winding trail through the foothills. Last night's strong moonlight had lit her path like a torch. She had made good time. Westward, Mother Ocean's face shone a deep indigo, frosted with glimmers of silver. To the east, the land grew more rugged. The coastal forest changed as she ascended, going from sparse firs to dense intermixed oaks and pines. Outcrops of granite spiked up jaggedly on several hills.
You should never have let him touch you. Don't. Not now. Later, when you've rested and can stand thinking about it.
Cloud Girl stirred in her sack on Kestrel's back, and a tiny hand twined comfortingly in her mother's hair. Kestrel reached up and patted those little fingers.
I'm all right, baby.
A merciful dullness had possessed her. It numbed not only her heart, but the tired ache in her body. She needed to sleep, but she feared the nightmares that she knew would come. If she could just keep pushing herself, perhaps she could make it to OtterClan Village by nightfall, even though Woodtick had said 2 days. Somewhere at the end of this trail, she had to believe, was safety. A place where she could sit with other people, watch children play, and try to heal the raw wounds in her soul. If she could just hurt for a while without fearing that her weakness would endanger Cloud Girl, she might be all right. She hadn't realized when she'd started loving Ice Plant that the price she would pay for that brief warmth and joy would be everlasting fear. How precious those moments had been, and how desperately she needed to let them go. And to let other things go as well. The trail grew steeper, and Kestrel hurried her pace, forcing her weary legs up the slope as fast as she could. As dawn approached, the dark silhouettes of the hills and trees gave way to a watery lavender light. The trail became clear and wide, cutting a path through rich meadows. She concentrated on the Otter Clan, trying to find some hope to cling to. She thought about the things she knew about the clan.
You can't even say his name.
A lump rose in her throat. She'd felt safe with him, safe for the first time in her life, and only now did she realize what it had cost him. By allowing himself to be her refuge, he had failed in his promises to Mammoth above. The memory of his anguished face last night haunted her. He had looked shamed and bewildered. Why hadn't she left him that day after the snow stopped? She had known very well that he wanted to be alone to dream. He could just as easily have given her directions to OtterClan Village as taken her there himself. It would have been abandoned anyway, but Sunchaser would have been spared this pain.
Oh, Sunchaser.
Kestrel started to shake, but not with tears. It was the dry shakes of naked emotion. Would he hate her now? Now that she had made him love her, killed his ability to dream, and run away from him without a word? Blessed above old man, she had hurt him in 1,000 ways. In the depths of his passion last night, when his white hair had hung like a glistening fire-dyed veil around her face, she had seen utter terror in his eyes. The terror of a man who suddenly realizes that he has become enmeshed in his own evasions and can't find the will to end them. It had shocked her enough to wring her from her euphoria.
I had to go, Sunchaser. You see that, don't you?
He could return to dreaming now, and she could get on with raising her daughter. Sunchaser had given her so much. Gratitude filled her for the time he had shared with her. Not so long ago, she desperately feared that tenderness had vanished from the world. In his presence, at least, that fear had died. Kestrel lowered her gaze to the trail and the dew that glittered like diamonds on the pine needles scattering the path.
Thank you, Sunchaser. Thank you so much.
Birds sang in the trees, greeting the first star people who gleamed on the eastern horizon. Oxbalm tightened the lacings on the front of his shirt, fending off the coming night chill. He sat on a deer hide between Sumac and Dizzy Seal. Horseweed and Balsam hunched on the opposite side of the fire, staring unblinking at the flickers of flame that licked up around the oak log. They both had their atlatls and quivers close at hand, as though they sensed danger afoot this evening. Oxbalm worked his jaw back and forth, feeling the threat in the air. It had reached such strength that the hair on his arm stood straight up. He hadn't felt evil this potent since the days when old Cactus Lizard had roamed the darkness in the bodies of lion and bear. Oxbalm's stomach knotted into a hard ball. Even the flames in the fire pit seemed wary. Most of his people had already retreated into the lodges to cook their dinners and tell their children's stories. The few villagers who remained outside had huddled around fires and were talking in low tones, as though they, too, felt the unseen horror growing. A witch was loose. Even those who didn't know it were catching the scent of evil in the air. Like a winter mist, it seeped through everything, chilling the souls of men, women, and children alike. A tripod with a bag of phlox blossom tea stood to the left of the fire, beside Dizzy Seal. His shrunken face was grave beneath the beaverskin hat that covered his gray hair. To Oxbalm's right, on the other side of Sumac, a pile of chopped oak logs was stacked, enough to last for 3 or 4 days. None of them had said anything in half a hand of time. They'd been watching the blaze of sunset ignite the translucent vestiges of clouds that limned the sky, and surreptitiously studying catch straw. He had built himself a sweat lodge down the slope right next to the trail. The small hide-covered structure nestled in the shadow of the hill, where it turned dark long before the west-facing slopes did. The lodge sat like an ominously hunched black beast. Dizzy Seal's mouth pursed.
Most dreamers would build their sweat lodge out away from people, not on a busy trail.
He wants to be seen.
Sweat beaded on Sumac's nose. She'd unbraided her gray hair and let it hang loose down the front of her heavily fringed doe-skin dress.
This newfound power of his has made him arrogant and boastful. I've never known a conceited dreamer.
Catchstraw is no dreamer. He does everything the opposite of the way a dreamer would, as if he's deliberately mocking the sacred ways of compassion and charity.
Old fool! Shh!
Horseweed saw that Catchstraw looked up at the hilltop. They all fell silent. Catchstraw's hooked nose lifted, and he scented the wind, then bent over the glowing hearth before his sweat lodge, his stick poking at the rocks heating atop the red coals. He'd stripped down to his breech clout. To Oxbalm's eyes, he looked skinnier, paler, almost as though the very breath of life was being sucked from him. Evil did that. That's how it survived. It nursed itself on the strength of the body and the soul. And if a man let it, it would drink him dry, leaving nothing but a hollow shell of flesh. The soul would rot out of the body, all black and twisted, like a slice of liver left in the hot sun for days. Catchstraw had started to look like that. His eyes darted constantly now, like a rabid wolf's. He shrieked at the children for playing games they had always played. Yesterday, he'd darted a little dog that had come too close to his new sweat lodge. Oxbalm had listened as the child who owned the little dog cried all night. Half of the village ran when they saw Catchstraw coming. The other half gazed at him worshipfully. His followers sensed the power that swelled in him, but they couldn't even guess at its malignant source. So far, only Dizzy Seal, Sumac, Oxbalm, and his two grandsons had witnessed the perverted mazes scattered in the forest. Oxbalm had been too frightened to tell anyone else. When it came to such lethal matters, he could trust few people. Catch Straw ducked into his sweat lodge, carrying three hot rocks on a litter composed of two sticks. He stepped outside again and took in three more rocks. After four trips, steam puffed up around the lodge's door flap. It glittered in the dusk, rising in thin serpentine wisps until it vanished in the breeze that rustled the tops of the tallest pines. Oxbalm hunched forward in relief, ran a hand through his damp hair, and gazed around the circle. Everyone stared at him through questioning eyes.
Not yet. We must wait until we have proof that he's harmed someone. Without that, his obscene mazes are not enough.
But Grandfather, do you remember what Sunchaser said that day after the mammoth's attack? He said he could no longer find his way through the maze. Isn't that proof enough?
Not unless Sunchaser stood here before us and told us that he couldn't get through because he'd been witched.
If someone is found guilty of witching, the sentence is death. I've never heard of any other punishment, have you?
No.
The problem is that someone has to kill the witch. I saw Pineboro when I was a boy. Everyone knew she was a witch, but no one could find the courage to kill her. Witches are powerful. You have to sneak up on them and kill them on the first blow. Because if you fail, they'll get you, witch you. You'll die horribly.
Balsam sat up suddenly and lifted his hand to shield his eyes against the last of the sunlight that haloed the western horizon. His pug nose wrinkled.
Grandfather, Harrier is coming up the trail, and he has two strangers with him.
Oxbalm swiveled to look over his shoulder. The newcomers were a full hand shorter than Harrier and wore a slightly different cut of hunting shirt, the kind that Oxbalm normally associated with the marsh peoples to the east. The shorter and older of the strangers looked to be in his mid-40s and had gray braids and heavy jowls. His flat nose seemed to sit right on top of his thin upper lip. Thick folds of skin hung loosely on his throat. He wore a grimy buckskin shirt and pants and carried a bulky pack over his shoulder. Despite the pack's weight, he walked naturally, as if born to the burden. A trader? The second stranger was taller than the first and maybe 10 summers younger than his companion. He'd knotted his hair into a black bun at the base of his skull. A thin band of red beads encircled his collar, but the rest of his elk-hide clothing was plain. No fringes, no quill work. Unease, even reluctance, marked the younger man's walk and posture. The older man's eyes scanned the village with the care of a hunting, saber-toothed cat. Not the sort of manner a trader generally brought to a new village. No, this was something different. And too many things were already different as it was. Oxbalm stood. Harrier lifted a hand to him as they came up the trail, and Oxbalm nodded courteously in response, despite feeling no joy at the sight of Harrier. The youth had been coldly polite for days, coming into camp every morning to ask what news Oxbalm had received. A hot tightness tickled the back of Oxbalm's throat, as though his body fought to tell him something that he didn't want to hear.
It's them, Oxbalm.
Who?
That crazy trader and his brother. The men hunting the woman with the newborn baby.
Dizzy Seal got to his feet, while Horseweed moved his atlatl to his side with such stealth that the movement appeared to have been accomplished through sleight of hand. Balsam had rocked to his knees, tensed as if to spring. Oxbalm glanced down at Sumac.
What makes you think it's them?
Well, look at the smile on Harrier's face. He's as anxious as mouse cornered by Martin. Notice how his hand grips the atlatl tied to his belt. It's them, all right. Harrier's probably wondering what to do with them, since their trader's wife hasn't shown up here yet.
Sumac, I would feel better if you were safe in our lodge. Why don't you...
I'm staying.
Why do you always insist on arguing with me when I'm trying to protect you?
Because usually that's when you need me most.
I do not need you. I have 3 men here.
That is exactly why you need me. This whole matter is over a woman. There should be somebody here who understands what she must have gone through. Or do you, as a man, know everything that moves a woman?
Dizzy Seal bowed his head to hide his smile. Oxbaum glowered at him, then turned to face Harrier as the youth strode up with his hand extended.
Good evening, Oxbaum.
Harrier took the old man's hand in a reluctant grip.
You remember my telling you about the men who were looking for...
Yes.
Oxbaum faced the short man with the gray braids.
You must be the traitor Lambkill.
The man bowed deeply and nodded.
I am. And this is my brother, Tannin. We're from the Bear Looks Back clan out in the marsh country. It would seem that we owe you a debt of gratitude. Harrier has told us that you've helped him, allowing him and his brothers to stay and watch the trails for my wife, Kestrel.
Oxbaum gestured to the fire.
Please, sit down and help yourselves to the tea.
Oxbaum lowered his old body to sit beside Sumac again, while the men found places and removed their packs from their backs. Sumac's eyes tightened when she saw how reverently Lambkill placed his pack in his lap and arranged it just so before unlacing two ties and removing a wooden cup. Tannin crouched warily beside Lambkill, his arms braced on his knees as he took out his cup. Harrier filled Lambkill's and Tannin's cups with tea, then pulled a piece of oak from the woodpile, tipped it on end, and used it as a stool.
I'm sorry to say, Trader Lambkill, that your wife has not visited our village yet.
She will. She is on her way. It's just a matter of time.
Well, perhaps, but...
No perhaps about it. We were at Whalebeard Village 2 days ago. They told us they'd seen her.
Sumac slipped her arm through Oxbaum's and shifted to rest on her hip, peering across at Lambkill.
That is no proof that she intended to come here.
No, but the man she was with asked for directions to your new village site. That strongly suggests that they intended to come here.
Sumac saw Tannin's sharp glance at his brother and tightened her hold on Oxbaum's arm. Apparently she sensed, as Oxbaum did, an undercurrent in that statement. Something left unsaid, purposely.
Is it true that your wife has a newborn baby with her?
She gave birth after she ran away from Juniper Village. She had twins. We found the place.
A woman pregnant with twins ran and escaped? She must have been very desperate.
With good reason. She had been condemned to death for committing incest with her cousin.
Tannin sipped his tea casually, but he gripped his cup in both hands as though his tension had built to unbearable levels. He kept glancing fearfully at Lambkill. Harrier extended his hands to warm them over the flames.
Oxbaum, Lambkill and Tannin ask your permission to stay here.
Only for as long as you and your brothers are here, Harrier. And you have 3 days left. More time than that I cannot grant. Already you've upset my village. Every man here has started sleeping with his atlatl, worried that this event might cause a war between our clans. The women are keeping their children close to the village. It's unhealthy having you and your...
But Oxbaum, listen. Lambkill knows that Kestrel is coming here. Maybe not in the next few days, but soon, and we'll catch her when she does. If you will just let us...
I have said no. Must I repeat it?
Harrier straightened, and his eyes narrowed.
Where is Catchstraw? If you will not give your permission, we would like to ask his.
Sumac surreptitiously patted Oxbaum's elbow. The gesture made him suppress the bitter words that had rushed to his lips. That, and the fact that he saw Horseweed silently pull a dart from his quiver, then knock the dart in his atlatl with unobtrusive skill. Oxbaum waved dismissively at Harrier.
Catchstraw is in the sweat lodge down the hill, dreaming. He said he didn't want to be disturbed. But perhaps he just meant disturbed by his fellow villagers, rather than by you and your friends. Would you like to chance angering him?
Harrier and Lambkill exchanged looks.
No. We will see him tomorrow morning.
If he's finished dreaming by then. Some dreamers stay in the spirit world for days at a time.
Not Catchstraw. He'll be available tomorrow.
Harrier stood up, and Lambkill and Tannin gathered their belongings and rose beside him.
You have been honest and forthright with us, Oxbaum. We thank you. It will cause you no trouble, I assure you.
I hope you are right, traitor. As I have told Harrier...
Oh. Horseweed suddenly bolted to his feet. All the color drained from his face as he peered down at the meadow. Oxbaum spun around, and his heart rose in his throat. A dire wolf, black and huge, loped through the wildflowers, heading for a copse of pine on the southern edge of the meadow.
Where did it come from? They're so rare now. Maybe we should mount a hunting party to kill it.
No. No, leave it be. So long as it doesn't bother us, why should we bother it?
Lambkill walked away across the hilltop, and Harrier and Tannin followed. But Lambkill kept glancing back and forth between Catchstraw's sweat lodge and the place where the wolf had disappeared into the trees, as though he knew. Oxbaum fought to still his labored breathing.
How could a traitor from the marsh country know a secret that even I am not certain of?
His gaze drifted over the dark branches of the oaks that filigreed the indigo vault of the sky. The wide eyes of owls flashed as they turned their heads to watch the retreating men.
Tomorrow, grandson, I want you to organize a scouting party. Pick 4 men, 2 to run the western trail and 2 for the eastern trail. Maybe we can warn this Kestrel and her friend before they walk into Harrier's trap. If she is a relative, she deserves at least that much from us.
Yes, Grandfather, I will. But the wolf, do you think...
It could have just been a wolf. That's all.
There's one way to find out. Sumac, please, for my sake, stay here with Balsam. Balsam, take care of Grandmother while Dizzy Seal, Horseweed, and I go down the hill.
Where are we going, Grandfather?
To talk to Catchstraw, if he's there.
Oxbaum, don't do this. What if the wolf sees you and comes back?
Then I will take it as a great favor, wife, if you would scream to call out all of our warriors.
Don't worry, Grandfather. I'm a very fast runner. I'll have our warriors out of the lodges and with their atlatls in their hands before Grandmother can yell twice.
Yes, you are a fast runner, the fastest in the village. Keep watch on us, grandson.
I will!
Balsam picked up his atlatl and went to stand by Sumac. Oxbaum turned to Dizzy Seal and Horseweed.
Come, let's get this done.
Horseweed had gripped his atlatl in his right hand, while a long dart lay balanced in the fingers of his left. As if anxious to fly, the dart twirled as he rolled it in his fingers.